Books presents Schism, written and read by Bruce Elgin. This book contains mature situations, including violence and intense fight scenes. Listener discretion is advised. Chapter 4. The clothes were dry. Finally, he was warm. With his feet sheltered by the worn boots, William Stagger had evolved to a more steady walk, and he crossed the street quickly to another alley. "This way," the caretaker said. The advisor and the hunter walked at his side, with the caretaker in the lead. William tried to push back the fog, to orient himself to the streets he had grown up in, with no result. He thought Jessica's apartment was in the other direction, but he couldn't be sure in the fog. He followed the voices a few steps more. Down the alley was a parking lot and what looked like a small grocery store. The pang of hunger at the thought of food gave him something to focus on, brought more color to his surroundings, and shadowed the intensity of the voices. The caretaker led him around to the back of the store and stopped at a dumpster. William looked up. Nothing to climb on. Nothing on the roof far above. "You need food. You're hungry," the caretaker said. He followed her arm. She was pointing at the dumpster. "There is food inside." The advisor stepped up. "It is fresh. Clean." William looked between them, then to the hunter as he prowled by. "No." He looked back down the alley. He needed to be at Jessica's apartment, needed to be there to protect her. The caretaker stepped closer to him. "You need to eat." The hunter joined in. "You need to be strong." William turned from them all. They were right. Without food, he wouldn't be able to protect her from anything. But this wasn't food. It was trash. He clutched at the dumpster's lid and tightened his fingers until the sharp edge pressed into his palms. The hunter stepped up, but William leaned in, closer to the pain, nearer to the rusted metal and the old, rancid odors. They gave him a focus. He dove into the sensations, and the fog wilted. After a moment, it had dissipated. He kept his grip to ward the voices away. His head sagged down to the lid between his hands. Even years ago, the voices wouldn't have listened. They protected him, helped him, but they had always been poor company, had never responded to his requests. And now, they wanted him to eat like this, out of the trash. "Leave." William leaned down further against the dumpster. "Just leave me alone." An image of Jess formed in his eyes, first in the white room where she held his hand and smiled without meaning it. He pushed that image away, went back further. He found one of the two of them walking and of a smile that was real. It was for her. William knew that. The voices had made him attack the doctor who wouldn't let him out. They had pulled him out here for Jess, because somehow she needed him. But he didn't understand how yet. He assumed she needed his protection, as Mary had in the hospital room. But from what? The voices wouldn't tell him what she needed protection from, only that she needed him. But that wasn't what was hurting him. He sank to his knees, turned his back against the dumpster, and closed his eyes. He knew what the voices had meant when they had said that she needed him. It was about what she needed, not what she wanted. She still didn't want him, and wouldn't want him like this, commanded by the voices and eating trash. He could escape the hospital, be here to watch and protect her, but he wouldn't get her back this way. "I don't want it." But he knew that didn't matter. As he opened his eyes, the fog settled around him. His face went slack. "You need to eat," the caretaker said. The advisor formed next to him. "Get up." William rose to face the dumpster. Brian flipped the pages one-handed as he stomped up the wide marble stairs to the homicide squad room on the third floor. Below him, the foyer boomed with more than its usual chaos, filled with politicians and brass congratulating themselves on their newest plans to combat crime. Brian continued up the steps, undistracted. He closed the folder. It was all a load of shit. A missing person case. That's all it was. A load of shit. For the first year after the fire, he had worked on his old caseload and new homicide cases. His clearance rate had been better than anyone else's in the department, and he'd scored 8 convictions. But then, 6 months ago, Hayes had stopped giving him real cases. Nothing. Not one new homicide case. Just busy work cases like this that should have been handled by patrol officers or junior detectives fresh out of school. Not a homicide detective. He was good at his job, and he needed every hard, draining minute of it. He trudged up the last few stairs, pressed through the doors into the homicide squad room, and wound his way around the nearest fabric-covered cubicle maze toward his own desk. The room gave up its 40-year history with laptops placed next to electric typewriters and tall file cabinets. The case board hung on the far wall, a tall, red ink list of victims' names. Still yards away from his desk, Brian could smell them before he could hear them. The stench was acrid, harsh in his nose. Not the warmth of campfire smoke, but the metal-tinged afterbite of a chemical-fueled building fire. It stopped Brian immediately. Another fire. With the smell still on them, it had to have been last night, and he hadn't heard or seen anything on the news, so it must have been another small fire, not one of the big ones, thank God. But he knew they would probably be talking about the big fires. He listened. Shit knows what they got doused with. Couldn't find a trace of gas or anything on their bodies afterwards. But they came running out of there like Roman candles. Never seen anything like it. That was Nichols. Worse than last night? That's wild. Brian didn't recognize this voice. It was probably one of the rookie detectives. Maybe Dieterle or Hicks. Don't tell it like that, Nichols, okay? Brian's breath eased at this voice. Myers. One of the best in the department. They even had a beer after work a few times, years ago. Myers was one of the few detectives that hadn't tried to foist paperwork off on Brian over the last 6 months. Brian continued toward his desk as Myers' voice came back. And you, shut your rookie ass up. You ever hear what it's like to burn like that? It's not wild, it's not cool. Brian rounded the cube wall and Myers choked back what he was saying. The three detectives were at the coffee pot only yards away. He dropped the file down on his empty desk. Mickelson, hey, I'm sorry. I didn't mean anything. Brian waved a hand at Myers. He sat, opened the file, glazed over the contents as the three men stood silent. Why did his desk have to be so close to the damn coffee maker? My lungs hurt for months, and all I got was smoke. He looked up at the rookie. It was Dieterle. You guys get another member for the task force? Nichols smiled, but it was Myers who answered. Fire's running short to train marshals. Lieutenant wanted us to have someone else. He thought a rookie would be best. Nichols' gut shook as he chuckled. Brian's hands dropped to his lap, right thumb to the watch face. How's the case going? Nichols reached out, tapped Brian's dark computer screen with short fingers. A sticky note hung there. See me. Hayes. Why don't you ask the lieutenant? Brian looked to Myers. Still short on evidence? Myers' eyes turned to Hayes' office. Got some bomb fragments from the new ones, the small ones. Still looks like racial violence. But the big ones? Nothing. They don't make sense. Brian met his eyes only briefly before Myers looked away. We're trying. We are. Brian nodded, pulled his hands back up to the file. Let me know, okay? His peripheral vision caught them walking from the coffee pot. Dieterle's voice came back to Brian first. What's his deal? Nichols chuckled again. Burnout. He let them all pass out of earshot. He reached out, rested fingers on the lower desk drawer handle, and stopped to check his watch, to burn the time into his mind. He allowed himself to look at the picture once an hour, though he knew he should switch to every 2 hours. With a slight tug, the drawer slid open. The glare from the overhead lights obscured Claire's face, and Brian reached in to tilt the framed photo. The last photo he had. The glare slid away, and he saw her deep red hair contrasted against the baby's thin brown hair. Both smiled up at him. It had been a trip to the park, just a snapshot that had turned out to be worth framing and putting on his desk. Every other photo, the albums and boxes of them in their apartment, every file on his old computer, had burned in the fire. It took 4 deep breaths for Brian to close the drawer. 1 hour, he could look again. He forced his focus to the sticky note. Gotta get the bad guy. He stood and walked to the lieutenant's office. What? Hayes answered the knock. Brian leaned in. You left a note. Brian! Hayes' voice softened annoyingly. Come on in. The lieutenant, sized like an NFL nose guard whose bulk had been pulled to his waist by a desk job, leaned elbows on his desk. How are you doing? Brian tried to tamp down his temper. It wouldn't do much good with Hayes. Hadn't in the past. Great. You want an update on the missing mental patient? Just wanted to make sure everything was going okay, Hayes said. Brian tried to think up a straight answer. I've got the lightest load in the department, and I get a cake case like this. Not even a homicide case. How could I be anything but great? Hayes simply stared back, Brian knew some half-wit department psychologist had told the lieutenant to go easy on him. "I want on the arson task force," Brian said. "Don't start." Hayes finally leaned back, dropped the caring, concerned look. "You put the rookie, Dieterle, on it when you know I don't have a single real case open?" Brian tried to keep his temper down, but he felt his emotions begin to reach up and overwhelm the rational part of his mind. "Never going to get on it. Just drop it." "They can't handle it," Brian said. Hayes shook his head. "Shut it. Nichols and Myers are good police." "They're just looking for one perp. There are two. The MOs are different." "And how would you know that?" Hayes asked. "Your briefings. Everybody knows all about it. My fire, the other two big fires. There were no traces of triggers, accelerants, nothing." Hayes filled the air with a sigh. "You know those fires burned hotter. They didn't leave enough evidence behind." Brian rubbed his eyes at the lieutenant stonewalling. "Fine. Bigger and hotter. That still sets them apart from the other fires. The skinheads left plenty of firebomb evidence at all of those." Hayes held up a platter-sized hand. "Stop. We're not looking at those as hate crimes yet." "Because you don't think so, or because the DA can't comprehend that the victims are always black, Latino, or Asian?" Brian asked. No answer. Brian watched his lieutenant stare back. He knew what Hayes would say if he could, if he didn't have the department's priorities dictated to him by higher-ups. Brian tried to drop it, to stay quiet, but his frustration with not being able to do his job, the one thing he needed, was too much to hold back. "How many more fires? How many more people have to die? Let me in on it." Hayes rose, towered above Brian. Every trace of sympathy and gentleness was gone. "Till you turn black, till you know one goddamn thing about anything, don't you ever bring up hate crimes to me again." The man blew out a loud breath, but didn't seem to calm down. "You think I have time for your whiny-ass shit, Mickelson? You think I don't know there's some group of racist assholes starting to torch the city? You think I don't worry about my own goddamn family getting burned to death by those stupid fuckers? You think my hands aren't tied by an idiot DA who'd waffle if they burn a cross and swastika on the precinct doorstep? You think I don't know it's gonna get worse?" Brian let the anger wash over him. The honest treatment from Hayes enabled him to finally swallow back a smart-assed answer. Instead, he let Hayes's words sink in. His lieutenant knew there was a racist group in the area, one that was responsible for the small fires at least. He hoped there was somehow a connection to the bigger ones, but knew that was a long shot. There had been nearly a dozen of the small fires in just the last few months, all of their targets minorities. There had been only three of the large ones, none of them recent. Any connection was doubtful, but Brian would dig into any evidence of a link. He kept silent and waited, but Hayes's anger was still on high. "That's right, shut it. You know damn well I'm never going to put your ass on that case, and if I catch you digging into it again, I'll send you for another psych exam, and after the last one, you'll be gone." Brian rose and walked to the door. Still, 2 years later, Hayes didn't think he could handle the grief. What could he do to change the man's mind? The work was what made him able to handle it. "I was doing the work. Look at the files," he said. Hayes leaned back a degree. "You were doing 20-hour days, Brian, using the work as a distraction and wearing yourself down. I know you can do the work. I don't know if you can do the work without killing yourself." Brian could only stand there. "Just do this case. Show me you're not sliding downhill. Then we'll talk." Brian nodded back, hand on the doorknob. "And don't leave. Our wonderful DA is doing pep talks in every department. Should be here soon, and I wouldn't want you to miss it." Chapter 5. The window creaked and flapped down against the back of his legs as William hauled himself inside and tumbled down to the dirty concrete floor inside. Pain spiked through his knee and pushed the fog back for a moment. He sat, sucked a deep breath in through his nose. Dust. Ancient residues of oil and metal were the first odors he could make out. He wiped some of the thick grime off his knees as he stood. At least his new home wasn't a landfill or under a bridge. He tried to count his blessings. An abandoned warehouse wasn't as bad as many of the other options the voices could have come up with. As the fog began to roil back into his vision, William snatched up the bag of bruised apples and the carrots, furry with tiny roots. He took an apple first, reached under his hoodie and wiped it on the t-shirt. Each action was precise. The focus on the bodily sensations kept the voices distanced, quieter. If he could only maintain it, keep them away. If he could show Jess they were gone, would she want him again? The thought of her, of good times, took form, solidified into memory as the fog built up around him again. He saw her, sitting across from him. They were outside at a cafe. She adjusted her glasses and smiled at him as he fell into the memory. William's hand went into a pocket, pulled out the small box. "Close your eyes," she snorted. "You think?" She left one hand out on the table. William opened the box, set it on the table, and moved her fingers to it. He waited. Her fingers explored in the box a long moment, ran over the diamond's facets. She pulled it out. "Wow." Her smile returned, and slowly she reached out. "You going to put it on me?" William took the ring and positioned it above her left hand. "So that's a yes?" "It's a yes." William looked down, eased the ring onto her finger. The memory blurred, became a different one as he looked at their hands together. His palm turned up and she eased something into it. 2 small pills. Around him, the room was white, undecorated. His hand tightened around the pills. The attention to his straining fingers drove the memory and the fog from William's vision. He looked down at his clenched hand, saw apple juice and crushed chunks dripping down from it. He shook it out, wiped it against his pants as the caretaker leaned over him. She turned away, frowning. He wanted to be at Jessica's place, waiting there instead of in an abandoned building. "You need to eat," the caretaker said. William looked up at her. His lip rose, exposed a few teeth in a snarl. "Eat." The hunter stood beside him. The advisor took shape on his other side. "You need it." William looked away from them. It was useless to talk, and he knew they were right. If he was here to protect her, he not only had to be nearby, he had to be physically strong enough to act against whatever was threatening her. If only the voices would give him more information, he would be better able to protect her. Eating these cast-offs, squatting in abandoned buildings, might help him get stronger, but it would only drive her further away. He sat for a moment, stared at the food, and knew it was more important to do whatever he could to keep her safe. "You will see her soon," the advisor said. "Leave me alone." Slowly, he stood, took another apple, and began to search the warehouse. The molded plastic seat of the chair bit into his legs in the middle of his back, but it was better than standing in the squad room listening to a politician lecturing on about the importance of their jobs in an election year. Brian had tried to make an early escape, but Hayes had been on guard near the door, and every detective unlucky enough to be in the office had been trapped for the duration. The hospital waiting room was a relief after that. Of course, going over the details of the perp's file was tipping the scales back the other direction. Not much of it made sense, and that meant that it wouldn't be as easy as he had hoped. He did want a challenge, but not on a worthless missing person case like this. The assault charges were a waste of time since the man was already a mental patient. As soon as Brian found this William Adams, he would go straight back to the institution. It was open and shut, obviously not something that would occupy Brian's mind the way he needed. He needed bigger cases, like he'd had before, something with more important stakes than finding a man who had choked his doctor unconscious. A murder, or the chance to work on the fires, would distract him, keep him from thinking about Claire and the baby. Brian shifted in the seat, though it didn't make it more comfortable, and looked down at his notes. Next of kin, Jessica Moore. Acute schizophrenia, no history of violence. The shuffling of bootied feet pulled his head up. An ER surgeon scanned the half-empty room and hooked his eyes on Brian. "Detective?" At Brian's nod, the doctor walked forward, pulled his rust-colored surgery cap down from a thin bed of matted hair. Brian moved the folder to the side and stretched his way up out of the chair. "Can I see her?" "She's in recovery. You can see her in her room soon if you need to. She'll be groggy for a few hours." "Anything you can tell me?" Brian asked. "About her injuries?" Brian nodded back and grabbed his notebook. The doctor rubbed at the splotches under his eyes. "Minor bruising to the throat, right-hand pattern, but no internal damage. She'll have a sore throat and hoarse voice for a few days, a week. Her right hand took all the work." Brian jotted down, "minor choking," saw the doctor looking at his own hand. "Broken?" "Crushed. Primary damage to the metacarpals and second and third phalanges, but several broken carpals as well." "Can you tell what did it? There was no weapon at the scene." The doctor's eyes remained on his hand. "No sign of mechanical instrument or any blunt trauma. It was simply compressed until the bones broke against each other." Brian waited for more. "No impact damage?" "There were bruises on the skin, some kind of ligature that looked like... it looked like a left-hand squeezing pattern at first, but I'm not sure what. No one's grip could have crushed the carpals like that. Had to be something stronger. Brian waited for the surgeon to explain, but got nothing. Let me know when she's out of recovery? The doctor nodded and left Brian alone with his notes and the plastic waiting room chair. Brian eased the door open and squeezed into the room. He expected the beep of a heart monitor, but only heard the intermittent whoosh of an IV hooked up to a self feeder. He looked down from the hanging bag of Demerol to the victim. Her hair, deep red, held his eyes first, but the temples showed the first hint of gray, wiry strands. He focused on those instead of the red to push away memories of Claire. The woman's face was tight with pain that the drugs had only dimmed. Her right hand was a balloon of bandages, perched atop a small mountain of pillows on her lap. Her left hand held the self-feed activator, its button ready under her thumb. He cleared his throat and her eyes cracked. Dr. Susan Weston? I'm Detective Mickelson. Her head turned slightly to him. I'm investigating the incident at the hospital last night, he said. Yes. I'm sorry to bother you right now, but can you tell me what happened? Her eyes opened a sliver more, and Brian could see her appraising him. I was assaulted. By? Brian asked. William Adams, a patient, Weston said. While you were checking on another patient, Mary Gingrich? She nodded back and immediately winced. Her thumb pressed on the activator, and the self-feeder whirred again. Can you remember any details of the assault? Brian waited 10-20 seconds for her reply. His hand eased over to the watch at his wrist. He grabbed my neck with one hand, began to strangle me. Then he started to crush my hand, she said. With what? She turned, slowly, to face him more fully. What do you mean? What did he use to crush your hand? Even in pain, she looked confused. His hand, what do you mean? He did that without a weapon, by himself? Brian asked. Detective, who else would have done it? She blew out a long breath. He saw her eyes scan down his body. Is something wrong? Do hospitals make you nervous? Brian snatched his thumb from the face of his watch and glanced back down to his notes. What happened after that? I believe I passed out. Will this take much longer? Just a few more questions, I apologize. The no history of violence note he had written stood out at him. Do you know what might have set him off? Again, her answer was slow in coming. Why? Did he say something? Brian's turn to pause. What? He heard the exasperated breath from her lips. Did he say something? He suffers from severe hallucinations, Detective. Whatever he might have said is very suspect. Brian stared at her. Dr. Weston, William Adams escaped after assaulting you. That's why I'm here. Her face went whiter and she jabbed her thumb down onto the button again. This is author Bruce Elgin. Thank you for listening to chapters 4 and 5 of Schism. And be sure to check out chapter 6 right away.